Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Learn a little bit more about the many great services offered by the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind. Also, later we're going to speak with Christina Davis from BISM. That's the Blind Industry and Services of Maryland. And we're also going to talk to a very accomplished retired colonel from the U.S. Air Force. And he will be sharing his experiences with us. And it is a cool day. It's great evolution that just because one loses their sight, there are still opportunities for them if they wish to stay in the military, but also many great external resources for training and getting up to speed on assistive technology and travel and the whole nine yards. But Joe, before we play our first interview, I know you had at least some dealing with veterans in your work in the state of Texas, and I'm curious how their needs might be different from just regular individuals coming in and needing services, needing rehab or training, job placement, things of that sort.
Right. So many people that usually come from the service, unfortunately, are coming back wounded, and they have some issues that they're working out beyond just what's happening with their vision. And so sometimes what you're doing is a lot more than just training somebody who's visually impaired. You're dealing with maybe grief, loss, and other issues. And, you know, those things can be inspiring. Those things can actually help people find their depths and do things beyond what they thought were possible. And that's actually some of the stories that I want to relate tonight, because it's really neat to see somebody say something that they can't do. Or, you know, I say as a rehab specialist, I'm not sure you could do this, and then have them turn around and just excel. There was a gentleman I can think of who was diabetic, and he had lost his vision, unfortunately, not from the war, but more from as he had gotten older, he had lost his vision due to diabetic retinopathy. The thing that he loved doing was accounting. He was in money and moving numbers around, and that was his MOS. And he was really, really excited to do things with numbers, which was beyond me because I'm nowhere near a mathematician. And he and I talked about what strategies could be used to be able to see numbers and be able to see the screen. At that time, he still had some vision. And he was trying to do the classic, let me use a 40-inch monitor and, you know, try to compensate that way. Of course, the issues that he was having was that his fields were narrowing, so a larger monitor was actually doing him more harm than it was good. The thing was is that I went out and challenged him, and I was new. I was very new to the job of rehabilitation, and I probably didn't say things as delicate as I could, because in my mind at that time, it was like, there's no way. I mean, all these numbers and everything like that, and you got to listen to it, and you don't want to learn Braille, and you know, you're not interested in learning how to cook and clean. So I'd kind of put my feet in the ground and said, you know, I don't think this is going to work. You don't seem very dedicated to the idea. And lo and behold, he actually went on to do really well, and he used me as his motivating factor.
And I'm going to play the first interview tonight with Norman Slocum, a retired colonel with the U.S. Air Force. And I think this is very, very interesting. Michael Love here speaking with Norman Slocum, who had a pretty extensive career in the military. And Norman, I want to let you first tell your story about your accomplishments there and at what point you lost your vision and kind of how things changed. Michael Love here speaking with Norman Slocum, who had a pretty extensive career in the military. And Norman, I want to let you first tell your story about your accomplishments there and at what point you lost your vision and kind of how things changed for you and what you're doing today.
I'm a country boy from South Alabama, and I had my undergraduate program during the Vietnam War. At that time, we had a draft, of course, so I chose to volunteer for the Air Force. Much fell in love with it, spent 27 years in the Air Force, and was humbled to become a senior officer. And I retired as the director of computer systems for Air Intelligence. We left from Alabama and have called San Antonio our home since 1969.
Okay, now at some point you lost vision, is that correct?
Yes, I did. Towards the end of my career, my sight started going down. I falsely thought that I needed a new prescription for my glasses and went to an optometrist, and he says, no, this is funky. So they sent me an ophthalmologist, and at that time, I learned that not all ophthalmologists are equal. Mine was with the retina, and I have a form of, I would say in layman's language, a form of cancer of the retina. It's called retinitis pigmentosa. It initially was misdiagnosed as the most aggressive form, and they gave me a short period of time when I would be losing most of my sight. But it turned out I have one of the least aggressive forms, so I've been blessed that since 1994, I have been steadily losing my eyesight. I have lost 100% of my peripheral vision and over 90% of my central vision, and I'm now losing things like contrast and color. So I still have some beneficial eyesight, but I'm certainly legally blind.
Now, things have changed in the past. If one was in the military, any branch of it, and lost their eyesight, that was pretty much the end of their military career. But that has changed lately, right?
It has. We have learned a great deal in the military that you don't have to be the poster child for the Marine Corps with the Arnold Schwarzenegger physique to be able to function in the military. You can lose a leg and still be very, very beneficial in the military with your expertise. In my case, the Air Force, they invested a tremendous amount of money. You can imagine back in 1967 when I started my career, we only had mainframe computers. In over 27 years, we evolved into what we know today as the laptops, etc., and also the standardized operating software systems. So you can lose things such as some of your eyesight and still have a tremendous value to the military because of the investment that they have put in you and your training and the experience you get. So today's military looks at the individual much more differently than we did back in the 60s when I first came in.
Now, for someone who loses their vision, what kind of special programs or services are available to help them make the adjustment?
I did not know, Michael. I was at first in denial. Because I had some beneficial central vision, I did not consider myself blind. I started off with ignorance that blind meant the absence of light, and that's not true. There are degrees of blindness. So I did not know that, and it took them to get through this hard-headed South Alabama kid. There are various programs out there, and I started through a delightful gentleman named Larry Belote at the Audie Murphy Hospital in San Antonio, and he actually browbeat me into going to a six-week veteran-sponsored school for the blind. I was inpatient, and I got to see 15 inpatients around me and their various degrees of blindness. And I got an appreciation for that and their fundamental program. And they introduced me to a software package called ZoomText, which requires you to use the keyboard instead of the mouse. And I began to understand how to utilize the sight that I had and one of the fundamental tools. But there was no checklist, if you will, which a lot of military are comfortable with, of the various blind services and blind tools that were out there. And I wish there had been when I started this road in 1994, because I was in a trial and error mode, partially prodding from my wife on things to consider, like using the cane when we went out every day. I'd only use it in dark situations, which you either use it or you don't use it. There's no halfway blind support. So I went through a trial and error process, thanks to gentleman Larry Belote, as I mentioned, and introducing me to the beginnings of things like ZoomText. And now I'm plugging into other organizations like San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind. They were exceptional in sitting me down for an eight-week course on how to take the limited mobility and exploit it with maximum flexibility by making the Internet my new mobility. And then the National Foundation Fighting Blindness introduced me to clinical trials and more education about my particular blindness. But that was a trial and error process. So I'm much more comfortable today with dealing with my blindness and wish that more people understood that there are a lot of tools out there, a lot of support organizations, but you're going to have the initiative to go out and seek them. There's no central checklist.
People just went through the system of using the various VA hospitals. Their mileage would vary greatly, so it's going to require a lot of independent research on our own part to find out. So some of this varies on a state-by-state basis. It's not like, even though you served for the U.S., there's not a national clearinghouse of veteran services for you. Do you want to talk about the whole veteran services process?
You're summarizing it very very well. I can't add much to that. You're going to have to understand your particular blindness, whatever your sight restrictions are, and you're going to have to plug in to the various organizations locally, also nationally and internationally, that will be able to provide you with the things that your particular vision restraints would benefit from. So it requires an initiative. I still think that in San Antonio, they are trying to do what I think is necessary. It's called the Coalition of Blind Services. They're trying to come up with a centralized database of all the things that would be available. As you might be aware, San Antonio has a huge military population with four major military installations. If San Antonio can pull that off, then I'm in a position to help anybody that I touch that, hey, go out to this website and check out this Coalition of Blind Services as a place to start. But it really goes back to the individual understanding their particular sight needs and then exploiting the tools that are out there to find what would best service you. There is just nothing that I know of from the national perspective that is currently available to everyone.
So I'm curious, in terms of disabled veterans, blind or otherwise, how many just become complacent and give up working or trying to do anything with their life? And what percentage do you think actually go on and try to pursue at least some form of a career?
Yes, I think most of them give up, Michael, and that's very unfortunate. When you lose your eyesight, you lose your sense of value, your sense of worth. Your sight restrictions tend to make you become the hermit. I went through a funky period there for, I don't know, 4 to 6 months, where I was content to sit in my chair and just say, well, okay, I've had a good life, and we're just going to have to accept the reality of this. Thanks to my wife of 45 years, she kept prodding me. I was a daily newspaper reader. I backed off from that. I felt it was too hard to use the computer because I could only see about half the computer monitor. That, I think, is a fairly typical human reaction. You just start backing off and shutting down. And thanks to the blind school that the VA plugged me into, you're not alone. There's a whole bunch of folks out there like yourself, but you do have to have the want to, the initiative to go out and seek being in a normal environment. I went to a period where I didn't want to go out to a restaurant because lighting was very important to my vision. If I couldn't see, I didn't feel like I would be bumping into chairs and being able to put my finger in my food to find out what I was eating. So you have to get past those things. And once you start repetitious self-training with little things that are unique to you, then you can be just as fully functional and engaged as anyone with normal sight, if I could use that expression. But you've got to want to do that, and you've got to find the support services that will help you do that. And I meet so many blind individuals in San Antonio through the Intrepid Center at Fort Sam Houston, with the folks that are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq that have eye damage, that feel like, okay, I need to depend on somebody else. Well, in most cases, you don't. You start depending on yourself, but you've got to understand that what you have in loss of vision does not mean that your life is lost. You can do a lot of things, but most normal individuals don't, and that's sad, and I'd like to get on my soapbox on that one.
So what do you do with your time these days, Norman?
I'm a full-time grandpa. I'm 68. I have 9 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, and my wife, thanks to her being the driver, I haven't driven in quite some time, we're very active with our grandchildren, and we just returned from a 3-week driving tour of all the scenic spots in Colorado. There's a mountain that we didn't see. It's because it's not on a map. Obviously, I don't see a lot with the vision I have, and with my wife saying, look at your 2 o'clock, you can see a mountain with snow on it, or look at your 9 o'clock, and there's a herd of elk. You can do a lot of things. So we travel, even though I have limited sight. We engage with our grandchildren a lot, and they're in California and Phoenix and in Texas, so that means dealing with airports to get around. And then I use my computer a lot. I'm much more a librarian now than I ever was when I had normal vision. I'm right now learning a lot of things on the Internet about the Muslim society and culture and religion, just to get an appreciation for that current affairs issue in the world. So there's things that I do on a daily basis that have actually expanded beyond what I did when I had full sight. I still cut the yard. It's not probably the neatest. I take a screwdriver and stick in the ground, and I drive in a straight line with my lawnmower, and I stick another screwdriver, and I turn around, and I come back and move the screwdriver over and do it again. So, you know, just adapting to finding out what you can do. So I try to do normal things. I use a hammer, even though I don't see the nail often. I have to kind of hold it with a little stick so I can know where to hit. We're engaged with our grandchildren. We still travel, and I still do the handyman stuff around our house and basically have a full life. Sometimes I don't even get a nap in the afternoon.
So you've had the good fortune of having a good partner, a good life partner, your wife, to help you overcome any initial issues of depression that you may have been going through. Unfortunately, others may not have that option. But what was some of the best advice that you got from your training in San Antonio that really helped you pull it all together and say, hey, life does go on. Let's make the most of it.
It's so essential, Michael, that you plug in to whatever available support group is in your area. I started out with the Blinded Veterans Association, which is in San Antonio, with a local chapter. And we would go to a monthly luncheon, and I would meet other individuals that are worse off in terms of vision than I was. And then I would also network with individuals. How did you deal with this? How did you deal with that? That social group, some were male, some were female. Blindness is not sex specific. So it's important that you get into some kind of support group and don't just try to sit in your house and listen to the television. It's not going to work. And I'm so grateful for people like the BVA and for the Audie Murphy program through the Veterans Administration to make me aware of that so I could start plugging into what was available in my community.
Is there anything you'd like to say to maybe people listening to this from the U.S. government standpoint, things you'd like to see them step up to the plate and maybe do a little better to help newly disabled veterans?
Yes, I would. Technology. We are in a technology era. When I came into the military in the late 60s, computers were something that were behind the green door with some funky people called geeks that did weird things. Well, computers are just a common part of our society today. There's a lot of electronic tools that are available. And I think that our national leaders need to understand that for the individuals that are handicapped in general, I think we're doing the right things in providing handicapped services. But for blind individuals, and specifically my bias, blind veterans, we need to be really plugged in to providing electronic tools that allow them to retain as much of their mobility and independence as possible. There is no substitute for feeling of self-worth, a feeling of value. And you can get that with the various tools that I'm aware of, such as Zoom Text. And there are others out there, but make them readily available and publicized, both to just general disabled individuals, because they're a source of networking with other individuals, and more specifically for those individuals that are blind, whether they're in the military or not. At a national level, there needs to be a concerted effort to make sure that the electronic tools that are out there are emerging. I understand there's a set of goggles you can put on now that if you're blind, it restores some vision, but I don't know anything other than that.
Norman Slocum, thank you for sharing your wisdom and experience with us. I know your story will be an inspiration to many to get up off their tail, make the most out of life. You only get one life. It does you no good to sit at home in your chair and listen to the mindless ramblings of the television. Go out and make the most of your life. And your story is appreciated and I'm sure will be motivational to many.
Well, thank you, Michael. First, I'd like to compliment you on what you've done. I think your program is certainly something that a lot of people can benefit from. Specifically, I would like to conclude my remarks by just simply saying that our nation, regrettably, was born from war. We were established as a result of conflict, and throughout our 200 years of history, we've had conflict. And thanks to the great men and women that we have serving us, we've allowed American citizens to experience a great deal of freedom, freedom that you don't find in a lot of countries around the world. We have an all-volunteer force starting back in the 1960s, and I hope that our American citizens understand the value of that, because not only is it one of the most distinctive military forces around the world, being one of the all-volunteer forces, we tend to kind of take it for granted. It becomes sort of detached. And I would like to hope that all of our American citizens will look at Veterans Day as a time to pause and honor those that voluntarily serve, and in my opinion, serve us proudly. Many of our allies respect that we have one of the most powerful military forces in the world, and many of our adversaries look upon the American force as something they don't want to deal with. And that says a lot about the American values that we have. So on Veterans Day, if you see a veteran, pause and say thank you.
Thank you, Norman Slocum. Very, very great message there. Now we are speaking with Michael Guajardo. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And he does some AT training down in the San Antonio area, if I could talk. Thank you, Michael, for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I'm curious here to get your take on what type of training do veterans particularly ask for when they come to you? I know one thing I learned before we even began here was I just assumed that a lot of young individuals maybe were losing their eyesight due to injuries, maybe Afghanistan or Iraq. But you're saying most are losing their sight later, so it's more of a assistive living and rehabilitation thing more than folks coming in and wanting career skills. But I'll let you give your take on what you're offering.
Yeah, exactly. I get quite a few, well, I won't say quite a few. I've gotten a few individuals that have come that are mostly elderly. And right now I'm working with a vet who's around 90 years old. And he just the sweetest man you could ever meet. And he's a military veteran, and he's really the only thing he's really wanting to do is to do some simple tasks on his computer. And he's using software that was provided to him by the VA. He has plenty of IT equipment and assistive technology that he uses, talking scanners, and he uses the Dolphin Guide software that is designed to allow someone who doesn't have a lot of computer experience to be able to access the computer and to perform various tasks. And so I get individuals like him and others, and they have more than just vision impairments. They have multiple health issues that they're having to deal with. So we tailor the training to where we work with them, maybe a couple of hours per week, and I'll sit with them and just get an idea what kind of things they'd like to be able to do on their computer, and work with them maybe for an hour or two each day I visit with them. So I might either have them come to our facility there at the Lighthouse, or I go to their home and work with them on their computer equipment there, and they're. They're so appreciative. Just having that an opportunity to sit there and have someone work with them, because you get a lot of IT guys that go in there and don't always have the most patience. And when you're working with someone who's a little bit elderly, and is trying to learn the computer, patience is such a necessity. And and I understand where they're coming from, and I try to. Understand what their needs are and work with them. They have a desire to be able to use the computer and do things on them. They want to be able to contact their grandkids with email or just perform simple tasks like creating a document. The vet I'm working with now, all he really wants to do is create like a memoir and describing his life experiences, and he's using dictation and to write down his experiences, and that's really all he really wants to be able to do.
So what, when you're working with newly blinded veterans, what skills are you finding that they need in particular? Is it strictly just technology on the computers?
Primarily, yes. The request that they've made is that they want someone to help them learn how to do things like accessing their email, creating a simple document, maybe play music files on their computer. I mean, they don't really have a strong desire to get out there and create PowerPoint presentations or these huge Excel spreadsheets. Most of what they're wanting to do is just do simple, basic tasks on their computer. And really with their different health issues, with their vision loss, and just their computer experience in general, they can't really do more than that. Especially with the amount of time that I have to work with them, I can't cover a lot of material. So I keep the curriculum that I used with these type of vets to real basic tasks, and a lot of it is just a lot of repetition. But past that, I mean, I don't really work with them on any of the things past the computer technology.
Okay, excuse me, I'm playing around with my webpage. So why don't you tell us about someone who really went on and, obviously I don't name names, but someone who really went on and kind of surprised you with their accomplishments. Joe gave us a story at the beginning here of Case was very successful, but he almost had to challenge the person and say, I don't think you're going to be able to make it. And that's kind of what pushed them to prove him wrong and go very far.
Mm-hmm. I had, this was a few months ago, I had a vet who was that I was working with, and he came to our facility to get training, and I was working with him once a week, and he would work for about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours at the most. And he had some memory retention problems. And, you know, even with that small amount of time that I worked with him, I was able to, you know, come up with a way that he could access his email account online. I mean, he had some vision left, so he was using Zoom Text, and he would go online, and we would just do these exercises that were pretty simple. You know, he just wanted to go on there into his Gmail account, find his email messages, and maybe send some replies to some of his buddies. And, you know, when I did the initial assessment, I was thinking, you know, he's going to have a really hard time because his memory problems are such that, you know, I could cover something pretty extensively. You know, we could be working on it for 30 minutes into an hour, and, you know, five minutes later, he can't remember what we just talked about. And so, you know, the way that I approached it was, okay, you know, he's having some retention problems. You know, how can we do this? So basically what we just ended up doing was just having sort of a list of directions that he could just write down, or could record on his digital player. He had a digital player where he would just record the steps to access his email account. And, you know, just the technology is there to where even someone with severe memory retention problems can still accomplish quite a bit. And and that really surprised me because he was very eager, very self-motivated. Even with his inability to recall things easily, he was still excited about using the computer. He was excited about the training. And appreciative of the time he was able to spend there covering these things. And, you know, he'd go home and break out his digital player, was able to get on the email, and he'd email me. He'd actually email me from home and saying, you know, okay, you know, I'm using the notes that we had there that he recorded, and he was able to send that email. So that gives you a really good feeling that, you know, even with the amount of time that I spent, the limited amount of time that I spent with him, he was even able to accomplish a task like that, despite the health issues that he was having to deal with.
I guess one of the stereotypes that you corrected me on, I guess I assumed that because of maybe a lot of the training that they had in the military, that perhaps it would help the majority of them adjust more quickly to something like this. And that's not necessarily the case, because blindness is right. A little different from something that you really can't plan for.
Exactly. They're having to deal with a number of things. Their failing health, their vision, their memory. It's a combination of things, and it presents a different type of challenge from the standard student that I might typically get. You know, someone who's just left high school, is about to start college. So I mean, these are very young individuals, and or someone who's just out to try to find a job, and they come in, and then they're typically a little bit younger as well. But this group, the veterans that I work with, are going to be in their early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, you know, to someone who's, you know, 90 years old. So that group is a completely different group, and it presents different challenges, and I have to find different ways to approach the training. I obviously can't just sit there and rattle off all kinds of keyboard commands and overwhelm them. They wouldn't be able to handle that. So it's that type of training with the vets. It's more piecemeal, much more with them compared to the younger people that I might work with.
So do you train people outside of Texas? In other words, do they have agreements where maybe another state feels that they really like the training that you offer in San Antonio and allow folks to travel there for independent living and AT training?
Not really. The people that we work with come in from around Texas. I haven't yet worked with someone who's come from out of state. That is something that we've discussed there at the Lighthouse about possibly doing something like that, perhaps online training with a format like that. I mean, really, you can reach anyone from anywhere and still provide training. So that is something that we're certainly looking into. But as of right now, it's primarily people from around the state of Texas that we work with.
Now, I just put up a link to the Veterans Affairs locator. Can folks go through VA and other, you know, or the BVA, or do they specifically have to go through kind of the state rehab system just as anyone else might coming and looking for a career placement, or how does that work? Where does it start?
Well, there at the Lighthouse, we accept any requests for training. So, I mean, it could be just someone who just calls us up and asks for training. So we do that. But the bulk of our referrals come from state agencies like the Division for Blind Services or DARS and the VA. So they'll call us up, email us, let us know that they have an individual that would like to come in for training, or they'll request on-site training. So we'll go out, the trainers that we have there will go out to their homes and provide that training. And so in the same way, we'll travel, you know, to all parts of Texas as well to provide on-site training, not just here in San Antonio.
Very good. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Joe? Because I know you did some challenging and linking. Are there other services in other parts of Texas? Because Texas is a pretty darn big state there.
Well, there's the Waco Center, which is one of the five, I believe, not hospitals, but training centers for the blind. There's the one in Phoenix, the one in Waco, and a couple of others. And that's unique because that's a place where you would go and get immersive training skills, where you would be there for 6 to 9 months and get a lot of those skills up front on how to do things from the ground up. Some people don't want to necessarily commit to a longer schedule to something like that. So they might utilize where Michael is in San Antonio Lighthouse to do some of that on a partial kind of thing where there are still the services where they and correct me if I'm wrong here, Michael, there are still things where you partner with a hotel and that person can actually come and stay at the hotel and transport back and forth to the Lighthouse and
right.
do a long, like a 1 week or 2 week or 3 week kind of training. And this isn't Club Med either, because Marty Hawthorne and Michael and crew actually give them homework assignments. You actually have some computers in your room. So when you're done, you can actually go back and work on some of the things that they've practiced. A little bit of the same thing, kind of immersive, that we're looking at in a long-term facility. But, you know, it's a little easier that way. It's a little less stressful. The family can be there. And not only that, you can actually, you know, maybe in some ways do things in a quieter setting and maybe accelerate your training, whereas, you know, in these other facilities, this might not be the case. But, you know, you need that. Sometimes being immersive, being in a foreign land, learning is the only way to learn a foreign language. So there are different learning styles for different types of people, and I think that's what Michael was touching on earlier.
Well, what about remote training? I mean, some people have some skills. They maybe just need a little touch-up. So have you looked at anything? You know, of course, Cerotech, we have our remote access capabilities where if they have at least a certain basis skills that you could cover them remotely in other parts of Texas, or if you even worked out agreements in other with other states, that you could do some remote training, at least for individuals who could benefit, at least have some base skills and just need a little touch-up, little orientation. I mean, you have the voice chat capabilities so you can actually talk to them, or maybe even use Skype now with video capabilities and kind of hear what they're doing and even intervene on the keyboard should you need to. Have you looked at anything like that?
Yeah, we have actually. And that the technology's gotten to the point where it's pretty easy to set up something like that. And it really just comes down to some logistics, getting that sort of thing arranged, and finding individuals that have a skill level set where they would be able to handle something like that. Because obviously, we're not going to be able to do that type of training with someone who has zero skills, zero computer skills. So they would have to have a minimum set of skills to be able to do that. Just to be able to access something like Skype or some other remote software where we could get on and provide that type of training. But it's a pretty exciting area that we're seriously looking into because there's just so many possibilities.
Even if they came in for a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, and they had a laptop or a netbook, and you helped them get it configured, and the memory skills were. Retention is still there so that you at least get them up to speed, get them online, and then do subsequent follow-up remote training and take them into other areas. That would seem like that would be a great savings in cost and time and travel.
Exactly.
And, you know, and especially in the economic times of today, that would seem to be very important. I'm going to give you a chance before I play an interview from the president of the San Antonio Lighthouse to kind of give an overview of all the many services that are offered. But any final comments you'd like to make this evening?
I think that the idea that we can provide these type of services is something that really motivates all of us in the technology department here at the Lighthouse. It's very rewarding. Having met with these vets and all the other students that have come through the Lighthouse and received training, it really gives us a lot of pride and a great satisfaction knowing that, you know, these people have been able to come, receive that training and be able to put it to use and find jobs, go to college and just improve their home lifestyle as well. So that's something we're very happy with and very proud of.
Okay, Michael. Thank you very much for sharing your expertise tonight. I'm sure it's been very helpful to a lot of folks. Let's listen to this interview with the president of the San Antonio Lighthouse and find out about the many career-based services for those who maybe not only need independent living, but mobility, cane technique, travel, cooking skills, and maybe even want to work and maybe even make some decent wages if the skill sets are there. So let's listen to that now from Michael Gillum, president of the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind.
In regards to veterans and the type of veteran services that you provide.
As far as my background goes, I was on the board of directors here at the Lighthouse while I worked for AT&T for many, many years. I was on the board for 3 years, spent 31 years at AT&T, and have now been the CEO here for 5.5 years because I left my job at AT&T because the Lighthouse just appealed to me so much, being from San Antonio and not having served in the military myself. It was a great opportunity to be able to stay in San Antonio, provide services to the military, and also contribute to the economy and provide jobs for people who are blind and would struggle getting jobs otherwise. The Lighthouse for the Blind here in San Antonio is inextricably tied to the veterans and the military. And I think that's one of the things that appeals to me and also to all the folks who work here, because we obviously have a large manufacturing operation here. We're the largest manufacturer of military apparel in San Antonio. And we make about 10,000 Army combat shirts every month and about 50,000 chin straps for helmets for the Marines and the Army as well. Do jackets for the Navy, all test kits for the Air Force. I mean, you name it, we are tied and produce on a daily basis things for the military, every branch of the services, really. Not only do we do that from a manufacturing standpoint, but we also have office supply stores, mission-critical stores on the military installations across New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. We sell all the office supplies, and on the Air Force side, we also provide all the uniforms, boots, socks, everything for any troops, any airmen who are deploying overseas to the battlefield. We have blind cashiers, and of course we hire veterans right and left, especially those who have been wounded again in battle. About 30-40% of everything we sell in those stores is made by someone who's blind somewhere in the United States. So the stores also generate jobs for people who are blind. And then the next part that we do is we provide services on many of the military installations, things like we do the mail room up at Tinker Air Force Base. We do the operator switchboard at Dyess Air Force Base in Abilene. We are now closing here in San Antonio, closing past due and old backlog contracts for the Army across the country, again, with people who are blind and disabled. And after we look at those three aspects, all of those, any profit we make from any of those ventures, we take and provide free services to people who are blind. Technology training, independent living skills, how to travel, how to cook, job placement, job training. Whether you're 3 or 93, we want to be able to provide anyone who's blind, and especially veterans, high-quality independent lifestyle.
speaking of services, let's take a look at the types of individuals that you commonly see and the types of people that you commonly help.
There are many services that we provide. Obviously, we focus on individuals who are blind. So in many cases, we will run into blinded veterans, again, who have been recently blinded and are typically younger, as well as veterans who are getting up in age and starting to lose their eyesight. So obviously, they're two very, very different types of clientele, but in both cases, they're looking for high-quality, independent lives, whether it be how to use magnification or some of the assistive technology to read newspapers and the phone books, or if you have no vision, to be able to use some of the software, the JAWS, the Zoomtex, some of that assistive technology to be able to read for them. We provide job placement services, really anything, how to travel, how to get around, anything that they need and require to live, again, an independent, high-quality life.
What kind of individual are you looking for to assist? And talk about some of the places in which people are assisting other veterans.
Naturally, the people we hire, the large majority of the people we hire at the Lighthouse are blind. And so they're outstanding at assisting veterans, especially those who have recently lost their vision. Whereas, and I'll say especially the younger ones who have lost their visions in battle, because it's such a stark transition for them. And they're looking for some type of encouragement, someone who they can believe in and can convince them that there's life after no vision, especially after they're so active and so vibrant. You mentioned Marty Hathorn. Marty has gone over to BAMSI, the hospital over at Fort Sam, for the Center for the Intrepid, and actually counseled with some of the soldiers who have lost their vision to let them know that they can do a lot, and there is a lot out there for them, whether in assistive technology and computers and things, that there is life after blindness.
You had mentioned orientation. I'm familiar with San Antonio streets. That's no easy feat. Do you find that some people take to orientation fairly well, seeing that they have a military background, so they're used to doing a reconnoiter or what have you?
Yes, they do adjust quickly to taking instructions and following instructions and learning the mobility. If anything, they probably get a little frustrated. Again, the younger ones do. The ones that have lost their vision as they get elderly are a little more patient and understand, because they've probably grown a little feeble as they've grown older as well. But now, San Antonio is a difficult place to get around, even if you're in a car and you're sighted.
One of the things that has really helped San Antonio is there's been some large corporations moving in there. I know call centers are very popular there. One time, an auto manufacturer that was going to come there. What kind of business opportunities do you see with jobs, and how are people transitioning into that?
At the Lighthouse, we do job placement, job counseling, job training, and it's not just for people who want to work at the Lighthouse. It's also, we place people within the community as well. We place people at USA Insurance, at Firstmark Credit, at Walgreens, Home Depot, Wachovia, at their call center. So again, it depends on the individual. Many of the individuals that come here who are blind prefer to work at the Lighthouse because there's another 250, 270 people who are blind that are working side by side. But we place people all over the community. And really, San Antonio has held up in the recession fairly well. In fact, the Lighthouse specifically has grown from about 200 employees to over 500 employees in the last 4 years. When it comes to San Antonio, I'm a little bit biased, but I've moved 22 times in my first 46 years of life all over the country in the world, and I can tell you San Antonio is my favorite city for several reasons. One is it's the largest city probably in the world where the cost of living is as low as it is, and also the largest city in the world that I've been able to find that has the least amount of traffic. Not that there's no traffic, but when you compare it to some of the larger cities around the United States, I think San Antonio is the eighth largest city in the country now. There's no comparison in terms of traffic and getting around the city. I've always wanted to live in a city where it would attract your relatives and grandkids to come visit and come see you. And with the Riverwalk and SeaWorld and Fiesta Texas and the world's largest water park just about 30 minutes away, you'd have a hard time finding another city that had that much to attract people to come and visit. It really is an attractive city, but I think the quality of life and lifestyle and the pace is unmatched when you compare it to other large cities. I would just say that the Lighthouse is a perfect place for people who are veterans to come to work or to spend time around. We have many, many veterans working here at the Lighthouse because we are so tied into the military and we're so supportive on a daily basis in many, many ways.
There has to be room for incredible growth as well, because if the city is growing larger, there has to be lots of opportunities. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I sure can. I can talk about some of the specifically that the Lighthouse is involved in. We'll be building a new military supply store on Fort Sam Houston soon, breaking ground hopefully in the next 6 months, which will generate lots of jobs for people who are blind and wounded veterans as well. About a 2-acre location there, right in the middle of all the activity at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio. We'll be building another new store up at Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico as well, and again another mission critical support store. We'll be hiring veterans as well as people who are blind or veterans who are blind. And we'll be building a new manufacturing facility here soon, hopefully to break ground in the next year to expand because of all the contracts we've gotten recently with Boeing. And we are now aerospace certified and can do work for any of the aerospace firms as well. So we're really looking forward to continued growth in employment and in turn growth in services and job placement services for veterans. One thing I didn't mention was that we've just won Best Place to Work in San Antonio, Best Place to Work in Texas, Best Place to Work for people over 50, all in the last year.
So for those who are maybe interested, what should they do to apply for some of these positions, or who should they contact?
They can call 210-535-5195. That would be our front desk. Or they can just Google San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind, and you can online fill out an application for and look at the jobs that are available.
Mike, we really do appreciate your time today, and thank you for explaining some of the services that are going on there. It sounds like a lot of opportunities for our veterans, as well as the blind individuals in the San Antonio area. Thank you again, Michael Gilliam, CEO of the San Antonio Lighthouse.
Thank you for the opportunity, and hopefully we can provide more services to more folks through the visibility you're providing.
Okay, we're going to play our last file here, and it is the Blind Industries and Services of Maryland.
Mike Wolof now speaking with Christina Davis of Blind Industries and Services.
Thank you for having me today.
We want to get an overview. Of course, this particular show focuses on services for veterans, but first of all, why don't you give us an overview of what you offer? And by the way, the website is bism.org. What do you offer?
Well, at Blind Industries and Services of Maryland, we try to offer something for everyone. So we offer a full array of services for people who are newly blind or have never been exposed to services before, as well as we offer a full range of employment opportunities for people who are blind or low vision, from anything from retail operations to production. Within our services division, with all of the newly blinded people that we're coming across due to either trauma, macular degeneration, the rise in diabetes or things, we offer a variety of programs. If you live in the state of Maryland, all of our programs are free of charge, which always seems to make people excited. And then we do have a small tuition for people that are out of state, but most of the times their rehabilitation services councils will pay for those services. They're still free to our students and participants.
Okay, so let's talk about, you have what's called the Adult Core Residential Program in a place you called SAIL for training and independent living skills. So let's talk about that a little bit and what you offer there and kind of what help newly blinded veterans coming in need.
Program that we offer is called CORE, and that is a residential program here in Baltimore, Maryland. We offer the Structured Discovery Program, and we focus on the core classes of Braille, learning to travel with a long white cane, computer technology and learning how to use speech software, and then we also do all the independent living skills you would need, as well as offering seminar classes to discuss a lot of the issues and topics and things that go into being blind. And so it is an intense program, but when you leave our program, you are fully prepared to take whatever the next step in your life may be, whether it's going back to a job, staying an active part of the military, or if you want to go on to higher education or anything that you might be interested in. We give you the skills you need so that you can be an independent, functioning adult.
Now, that's a good point, because you mentioned that some folks can go back into the military and pursue their skills and interests there. How common is that?
Well, from what I understand, especially with like the Wounded Warriors programs and some of those programs, it's happening more and more often. This is the first time that someone who has lost their vision or had some other disability that in the past would have had them leave the military, they're now given an opportunity and an option to stay active and to remain in the military. Now, they might be doing a different job than they once did, but there's still an opportunity for them to work.
I think that's pretty awesome.
I think it's awesome, too. It's a pretty exciting opportunity for a lot of the men and women who have served our nation.
So what about the counseling component? Someone comes in, maybe they've been newly blinded based on their military duty. How do you help them get over the hump that, blindness is an annoyance, but life does go on? How does that work?
That's a big part of all of our programs. I mean, the biggest thing is learning to accept that you are blind and that it's not the end of the world. It's just the learning that the skills that you need are just a little bit different than the skills you already possess. So whether it's learning to alter the way you cook or how you travel and cross the street, it's all about learning the skills that you need to function. And so it definitely is a hurdle that some people easily overcome, and other people it takes a really long time. People do come in and they think they're ready to take part in the program, and they find that they maybe need a little more time. There's other people who never thought they could do it, and they graduate in 6 months and they're kicking butt and taking names, you know. So it's always a good thing to see. But the seminar class that we offer twice a week in our core program and once a week in our SAIL program is really where they focus on a lot of the issues and dealing with the stereotypes and dealing with the perceived things that go along with blindness, and they talk about just a variety of topics all the time. Sometimes the students bring them up, sometimes the instructors bring them up, and it's just an ongoing process to accept where you are in your life right now and to get moving forward with the rest of your life.
I assume some of them kind of go into the production side of it, so I'm curious what types of products. I saw from the website, you have over 150 different products, everything from office paper products, janitorial supplies, cut and sewn products. Talk about the industry side of BISM.
We're fortunate to offer both sides of things, and our production is a very successful component. We do in 3 out of 4 of our production facilities, we do focus mainly on textiles, where we actually manufacture military uniforms for the United States Navy, the United States Army, and also the Marine Corps. And we do a variety of jackets and scarves, and looking to do bathing suits and the Army combat uniform for the Army. And so it's always good that we can give back to the military in that way. And then within our Baltimore operation here, we also do manufacture paper tablets that are used throughout the military as well as in the federal government. And then we also do a full line of janitorial sanitation products that are used here within the state of Maryland. We're also fortunate enough to offer some other options. We operate 6 Office Eagle-based supply centers on different military installations throughout the country, in Washington, D.C., Delaware, Maryland, and then Fort Knox, Kentucky. And there we offer a one-stop shop for whatever a military person might need, whether it's office supplies, like anything you might find in one of the big box stores, or it's also very mission specific, so each location offers that. And we actually have people who are completely blind able to stock shelves, do inventory, check someone out with a counterpoint point of sale system, or do any job that anyone who is sighted can do. And so we try to give people a variety of options, and once they're confident and have the skills and the training that they desire and are ready to go back to work.
Now, you mentioned assembly and packaging for commercial clients, so who are some of the corporate vendors?
We work with a lot of smaller business. We always try to stay focused on small business here at Blind Industries and Services in Maryland, since we're a rather small business ourselves. So we work with some local filling companies with elevator parts and some packaging and filling, and we also do some spring water and purified water business with some local small businesses in the state of Maryland. We try to stay busy and keep all avenues moving so that we are represented well in all the different marketplaces.
And then how many people show up for work on a daily basis in your main headquarters?
Here in Baltimore, we employ about 150 people, but we employ about 425 people total in Blind Industries and Services in Maryland. That includes our rehabilitation as well as the 4 manufacturing facilities and all of the different Office Eagle stores that we operate as well.
And I realize this is kind of a broad question, but what one with at least average or above average production skills, what they might feasibly be able to earn in doing production type work?
At Blind Industries and Services in Maryland, the lowest paid associate we currently have makes $7.50 an hour. And if that's right, with a guaranteed review and hopefully a performance raise at 90 days after you've done your beginning and done your training and stuff. In terms of production, I believe one of the highest paid, it goes up to about in the $20 range per hour. So it just depends on what you're doing and what your specialties are and what you're able to offer. Also, then we always offer a variety of salaried opportunities for people as well, blind and sighted.
Now, a tough question here, but do you have people that you just can't assist? I mean, what if someone comes to you and says, well, I want your independent living skills, but I don't want cane travel because I'm going to get a dog, so I don't need to worry about a cane. How do you deal with an issue like that?
Well, we don't turn away anybody that wants a guide dog or has a guide dog. We just try to talk to them a little bit about what some of learning to travel independently with a long white cane. We never discourage people from getting a dog, but we try to teach people some of the skills that they might need so that they can operate with or without a dog. But if someone, obviously, we're always open. We take tons of phone calls every day, and we are always open, and we always just point people in the direction that's best for them. We service over 2,000 people a year. Not all of those people walk through our front door. Sometimes they're just looking for information, and we are a good place where people can call, and we can just try to get them the help they need and try to get them going in the right direction. It's really hard sometimes to find what you're looking for, and so we just try to be a door.
Can people contact you directly for services, or do they have to go through the state rehab system, as is the case in many states in the U.S.?
They do actually have to go through the state rehab services, but we try to make sure we get them the information so that they can go the most direct route possible. And then we usually work and help and try to follow up not only with the potential person who wants to come receive our services, but as well as with the counselors to try to help expedite it and keep everybody moving in the same path.
Very good. Any other important points that I haven't covered that you'd like to mention in terms of your services for veterans?
No, I think you've really covered it. We really are thankful for the opportunity to talk with you and all your listeners today, and we welcome anyone to look at our website and to give us a call and to check out what we have to offer, or even if you just need some help getting the right direction in an area where you might live, we would love to help whoever we can.
Go ahead and give your contact information, please.
Okay, our website is www.bism.org, which is BISM.org, and the easiest way to reach us is at 888-233-4567, and from that number we can get you pointed in any number of directions, whether it's employment or it's for services or you just need some help getting in the right direction.
Christina Davis with Blind Industries and Services of Maryland, thank you for taking a few minutes and talking with us today.
Thank you, Michael. I hope you have a great day.
Okay, so that's what we have for you tonight. I hope the information and resources have been of use to you. Of course, you can always look at these links, and we'll add other materials as we find them at cerotalk.com. We thank all the folks for participating tonight. Down to 2 minutes, and of course, Joe here with me again. And of course, if you like, you can follow up and come to the tech room on SAMNet. That's a System Access Mobile Network. If you aren't already a member, you can get a free 7-day trial real quickly by going over to satogo.com, satogo.com. Set it up 7 days. You can try the System Access screen reader and SAMNet. Find out all the cool services offered over there, including live voice chat to meet other folks just like yourself. We invite you to join us next week, November 18th. It's our holiday online shopping tech chat. So we're going to give you some resources for both economical products, give you a tip or two about safe online shopping, protecting yourself by using a credit card, what happens if your items are damaged, defective, or they're promised to be delivered and then they're not by Christmas or whatever holiday you may be celebrating this year. So just some things to keep in mind as you go through that. So with that, we are going to put the wraps on this tech chat number 77. And again, we pay our respects and tributes to all of the folks in the various services, past, present, and future, for fighting for the freedom that we have, giving us choice and opportunities that many do not have the good fortune to receive. So until we meet again, we invite you to stay connected and, of course, as always, stay directed.
This concludes another Cerotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Cerotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.